Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I'm sure most of you are aware that Georgia has a little bit of a back history when it comes to black jerseys. This is something that fans really like, and at times it seems like Kirby Smart is sort of annoyed by the whole process here. And, of course, longtime UGA fans will remember how exciting the 2007 blackout win over Auburn was and how disappointing the 2008 blackout version was against Alabama, which UGA kind of got beaten up. Nobody thinks that black jerseys lead to a win or have ever led to a loss. That's not the thing. It's just, I think for a lot of Georgia people, the 2008 game against Alabama was made more embarrassing when Georgia had the special jersey on and came out and laid such an egg on the field there that day. And for Smart, who's sort of like allergic to anything that could veer in the direction of a distraction, the black jerseys kind of have that thing. A big topic for fans prior to games, especially the big games or a big night game even more so. And anything that's not X's and O's between the wide lines, sometimes it seems like Smart just kind of wants to avoid the entire thing. Maybe the best example that kind of crystallizes all of this, if you want to go back to 2018 for a moment, before Georgia was getting ready to face Auburn, big home game. And was, you know, almost right there at a decade since the black jerseys had originally come out against the Tigers way back in 2007. And Smart was asked during his press conference about all the fan chatter of the idea that George would wear those black jerseys. Here's a little bit of what Smart said at the time, which, as I said before, kind of, you know, perfectly encapsulizes his feeling on all this.
It doesn't surprise me anything fans do. It doesn't surprise me at all.
Be clear, traditional home red better.
I guess, yeah. I mean,
whatever, John.
I'm not really concerned with that. I'll let you guys get the hits and the likes on that. I just want to get the team ready to play.
No doubt. There are hits and likes to be had on the subject of black jerseys because fans do like them. And the reporter here asks Kirby in that clip that you just heard, so does that mean you're going to be wearing your traditional home red on Saturday? And Smart doesn't even want to entertain the possibility. However, in that same press conference way back in 2018, he did go into a little more detail about his philosophy and all of this, acknowledging that there is an important faction of folks who seem to like the black jerseys, but ultimately maybe it's the kind of distraction he wants to stay away from. Here's a little bit more of what Kirby Smart said on that subject at the time.
We did it a couple years ago against somebody. I think it was one of the to buy teams or something, and really for energy and enthusiasm. I don't think you need energy and enthusiasm for Auburn. If we can't get up for Auburn, then we've got some other problems, and we got to be excited to play. And I just don't think that's not relevant to me. It's not. I'm not saying that we're not ever going to do it. I'm not saying that we are. That's just not really what's important to me. That's just me. I believe in the guys going out and playing physical, playing hard, and you don't have to do things like that to get them fired up to do it. I really think they should want to do it. It was great for recruiting, so.
So I'm kind of a traditionalist by nature. I like the red jerseys at home. I love the silver britches. I don't want to see Georgia drastically depart from what it has traditionally done. However, I will admit that I've also someone who's kind of softened his stance on the black jerseys over time, because while a traditionalist, I'm also a little bit of a populist as well. And if the majority of Georgia fans want the black jerseys, then who am I to say no to that? And yet, even with that said, there's a portion of me that also kind of agrees with Smart there that black jerseys as a motivational ploy, I just think, is a really bad idea. Not because it makes you more likely to lose a game, but for the most part, that's just the wrong way to use it. It is a clothing item, and so therefore, as a fashion statement, I'm fine with it. As some sort of motivational ploy, it's probably the wrong thing. It's also, I guess, fair to point out in the midst of all this that the players themselves have kind of always wanted to wear them. I know that Brad Nessler on our show last year talked about the fact that Jake Fromm really wanted to wear the black jerseys, and when Mike Griffith caught up with DeAndre Baker at the end of his Georgia career before he got drafted by the New York Giants, the subject of black jerseys also came up there. And here's what Baker told Mike Griffith at that time.
Did you guys ever lobby to wear those more often?
We wanted to wear the black jerseys every week, but we didn't get a chance to.
You think Kirby will ever let that thing go, or will we see that anytime soon?
Never. No time soon.
So the players, according to DeAndre Baker, always wanted to wear them, but Kirby Smart's never going to acquiesce on this. He's never going to relent. He's never going to let the black jerseys be worn. Now, you may be wondering, why is it that I'm starting the show with this here today? It's because the Georgia football, the Twitter account here within the last couple of days has tweeted out a picture, and it's Jordan Davis's number 99 jersey, although the jersey is not really all that important, and it basically asks, hey, what do you like, the red jersey, the white jerseys, or the black jerseys? And it's a cool video that kind of switches back and forth between the three jerseys, and they're, you know, displayed really nicely in the Georgia locker room. And the responses to all this are really pretty funny, because for the most part, everybody sort of picks the black jerseys as their favorite, but you've also got people like Caleb Hutchins on Twitter who says, either wear the black jerseys or stop toying with my emotions. Joseph Cooler on Twitter says, we need to have another blackout game. A lot of folks are doing that. Jason Miller says, can we not just have all three? Basically meaning, like, why is it that Georgia never wears these black jerseys anymore? Some folks are asking for the red pants again, but a lot of folks are like, basically saying, you know, as one of our commenters mentioned before, of, well, why is it that you're even bringing this up if deep down we know you're not going to wear them? So I think it's pretty funny to see Georgia seemingly always kind of teasing this, always kind of flirting with the idea that they may one day wear the black jerseys. But for whatever reason, it ultimately never really seems to happen. So my idea on this has been this. I'll pitch this and see what you guys think about it. I've said now for a few weeks, really going back a few months here on the program, of, as a way of destigmatizing the black jerseys themselves, what if Georgia, instead of wearing them, you know, less frequently, wore them more frequently? What if for a while Georgia wore them almost as a home uniform, or every night game, or whatever else? Just found a way to say, we're always wearing these, or we're going to wear them more frequently, we're going to rotate them more with the red jersey, the white jersey, whatever else. And from that standpoint, it's no longer a motivational ploy. It's no longer something that comes out as a distraction prior to the big special games. It's just sort of something that Georgia wears. If recruits like it anyway, and seemingly they do, almost all of them choose to have their on-campus photos taken in the black jerseys, then why not find a way to wear it more? Now, that's a huge leap for someone like me to be able to make, because let's face it, you know, wasn't all that long ago that I would have preferred Georgia not wear the black jerseys at all. But since people seem to like them this much, it seems weird that Georgia never wears them. I understand Smart's motivation for not wanting to be a distraction prior to games, but it seems to me the way of destigmatizing that and making it less of a distraction is to have fans assume that they will see them and then get a chance to do that. Not with some sort of specially sanctioned blackout, but just black jerseys because the black jerseys look cool, especially if the weather's not too hot. So that's my argument on that. Ultimately, I'm guessing that this particular situation is going to remain in place for quite some time, with fans wanting to see them, Georgia teasing that they will wear them, but then ultimately not doing so. On a very different subject here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door, let me also mention something else that Kirby Smart has said this week. As Georgia student athletes get ready to get back on campus, as they get ready to get back to their coursework, having to work remotely online, Smart, Scott Strickland, Courtney Kupetz-Carter, and some of the other UGA coaches are challenging their students to stay on top of their coursework right now. Let me give you in particular what Smart said to student athletes in a video that was widely shared here on social media over the course of the weekend.
And the last thing I need you to do is remember your virtual advising appointments that are upcoming here soon. All right, remember this, stay safe, attack the day, and hunker down. Go Dawgs.
I mean, really an inspiring message there from Smart, and it kind of goes along a little bit more practical message and information from some of the other Georgia coaches about how to stay on top of coursework during this time. And I think, make no mistake about this, I think this is kind of a challenging time for these coaches, because I think you're worried about, you know, guys or gals, depending on the sport you're talking about, falling through the cracks during a moment like this. And it's not easy for everybody to stay on top of all of this. John Stinchcomb, in addition to being a great former Georgia player, is also a really good student. I'm going to talk to him about this when he joins us in a moment for our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update of, you know, just how difficult is it to stay on top of all of this. And I think it really does kind of combine with the conversation we've been having about, you know, weight room work and physical conditioning right now, that when you are forced to be your own boss, when you're forced to be your own accountability partner, some people are going to handle that better than others. But that's clearly the place that college athletics finds itself right now, having to manage this unique situation. Luckily, a lot of the players that are going through this are a lot more tech savvy. You know, when I was in college, I had a public speaking class as one of my electives. And in that class, the instructor set us down one day, took us into a computer lab and said, this is Yahoo. This is how you research to make a speech on something. And at that point in time, I'd never heard of the internet, never heard of Yahoo, or never heard of anything else. So from that standpoint, when I was back in college, there wasn't the same kind of technology that's available here today. So these student athletes probably a little bit better equipped to handle all of that. And the business that is beginning right now, and it's nice to see Kirby Smart with an encouraging message to his student athletes to do just that. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Pella Window and Door, and it's good to have you with us. And yes, the banjo music is back. Good news for some of you, maybe not quite as good news for others, but nonetheless, we're glad to have you here in the program today. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. And of course, Pella Window and Door of Georgia can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. And by the way, right now, to help best serve you during unique times, you can connect with Pella through a video chat to talk about your replacement process for your windows, your doors. You can also schedule a free virtual appointment with a Pella expert to discuss window and door treatment options. Here's how it works. Simply go to PellaBranch.com to schedule your appointment. You're going to receive an email from your local Pella expert with a link to start your chat. Then you'll get a free, no-pressure consultation with expert advice from a Pella expert who will show you product samples, talk you through the installation options, and provide a free quote and answer any questions you might have. And of course, also a great deal from Pella Window and Door of Georgia right now. Through April 23rd, you can replace all your windows for as low as $78 per month or get 40% off qualifying installations. Simply go to the website once again, PellaBranch.com. That's PellaBranch.com, or give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom at 404-445-2979. That's 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best. It is a Monday here on Dog Nation Daily. That means it's a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with John Stinchcomb here coming up in just a moment. Before we get to that, though, I want to talk about something else I've kind of noticed about the national media and its treatment of Georgia here over the course of this offseason thus far. You know, the last couple of years, for the most part, it seems like there's been huge unanimous agreement about what Georgia is and what Georgia isn't. For instance, almost all the preseason polls the last couple of years have had Georgia as like the second highest rated SEC team in kind of the like the top three, top four, top five. So, you know, among the very best teams in the country and just missing out on the college football playoff. Now, ironically, the last couple of seasons, that's exactly how it's played out for Georgia. And in the preseason polls, the national experts, for the most part, have gotten that exactly right. In unanimous agreement, almost for the most part, and for the most part, absolutely nailing the projection on the field. This offseason, you seem to see something a little bit different brewing. You seem to see a little bit more disagreement about how good Georgia is or maybe how good Georgia isn't. An example of that comes, and I know Mike Griffith has written about this at DogNation.com, the USA Today recently updated preseason top 25. Georgia at one point in time was all the way down at number 11 in that way too early poll. And after bringing in Jamie Newman and some other changes that have occurred, Georgia's been skyrocketed all the way up to third, just behind Clemson, Ohio State. What Paul Meyerberg, the USA Today writer, says is that Georgia took a big step forward in the post-spring rankings after cementing its quarterback position with Jamie Newman. Replacing Jake Fromm's experience and reliability may be difficult, but Newman's arm and athleticism should provide a different look to an offense run by a new coordinator in Tom Monken. So USA Today says we feel good enough about Jamie Newman to move Georgia from 11 all the way up to number 3 in our preseason top 25. Conversely, though, there are other outlets, including our buddy Pete Futak over at College Football News, that has recently listed Georgia as the most likely SEC team to disappoint this season. What Futak writes there is, the Bulldog talent level isn't a problem after years of phenomenal recruiting, but there's still a whole lot of work to be done given the fact that 10 players off last year's team with the NFL Combine, along with at least 13 starters projected to be off the team that won the Sugar Bowl at the end of last season. So Futak says that if you're looking for a potential disappointment in the SEC, look at Georgia because of everything it has to replace. And I guess here's the point and the takeaway I'm going to have in all of this. I actually think that a little bit of disagreement about Georgia and maybe some Georgia doubters is probably a good thing for reasons we've kind of gotten into before. It gives you a critic to vanquish, a foe to maybe potentially motivate you in some respects, but also it's probably a criticism worth paying attention to. I mean, if you go back and listen to what some of the national experts were saying about Georgia before the start of last season, that the absence of experience at the wide receiver position could potentially cause some trouble. I mean, I think I downplayed that a little bit, right? I mean, I kind of told you that the overall talent level for that group would overcome that. And the truth is, incoming freshmen like George Pickens and Dominic Blaylock did have great seasons, but ultimately the national experts in that case ended up being right, that the inexperience of the receiver position was kind of a yoke around Georgia's neck all season long. So I guess for the people who say, hey, given what you got to replace, given all the newcomers, given the fact that you got a new offensive coordinator, no spring practice, that may be something worth taking seriously. I mean, I guess that criticism should at least be listened to, shouldn't it? I mean, ultimately, I think that Georgia's probably going to be fine, and ultimately, I think that Georgia's not any more hurt by missing spring practice than any other team is. But it's fair to point out that as we head into this upcoming season, that the media is treating Georgia a little different than it has in the past. Suddenly, you've got some people who think Georgia's really, really good, other people who are not quite so sure. There's a little bit less unanimous agreement about the Dogs there's been in the past, and it'll be interesting to see what version of the Dogs ends up showing up on the field here this fall. It's great to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. We'll get into more of these sort of preseason projections for other SEC teams later on in the show. For now, for more on this topic and a whole lot more, let's talk to our buddy John Stinchcomb. It's our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. It's great to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Here on Dog Nation Daily, it's time now for our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. Chance to talk to John Stinchcomb, back in Georgia football here. And John, it's a beautiful day, and I think we're all trying to make the best of the situation. And no better way to do that than to think about the season that we hope we get a chance to enjoy coming up here in just a few months' time. At least it sounds like a good idea to me anyway.
Always a good time for a distraction, especially when there's so many of us that are stuck at home and thinking of ways of at least mentally escaping the four walls that we're surrounded by.
So we're going to start with a topic that could not be less serious, but I do think it's at least kind of interesting, especially the way in which fans kind of interact with this. And I'll give you the backstory briefly. I talked about this before you joined us, that there was a recent tweet from the Georgia Football Equipment Twitter account where they were talking about which what fans' jersey preferences are, and the red was mentioned. Georgia always wears that at home. The white was mentioned. Georgia almost always wears that on the road. And the black jersey got a mention as well. And the fan response is really funny because the black jerseys are legitimately popular, but there were also a few fans who were like, why are we even talking about this, given the fact that Georgia pretty clearly is never going to wear the black jerseys in a game, which I think is kind of a funny response to all of this. I mean, you are, I think, probably like me, a little bit of a traditionalist, but where do you come down on the notion of black jerseys and whether Georgia should be wearing them at all? And if so, what are like the rules for you to see the black jerseys brought out?
Well, first off, what a blessing it is that our colors are red, white, and black with silver breeches. I mean,
yeah,
if there's a prettier uniform out there, I don't know of it. And I'm just grateful that my team colors don't have orange in them.
Oh, yeah.
In any way, shape, or form. So we're spoiled with riches at this point. But for the black jerseys, I like them. I think it's something different. I think it energizes the stadium and gives us something to talk about in the middle of the off season, where fans are chomping at the bit for some taste of sports. But for me, I think it should be special. I think the atmosphere should be fitting and made a little burst in our favor. And so I like the idea of wearing black jerseys when it's unexpected in a big game. That's kind of the scenario that I like for it to play out in. And when it comes down to the standard white and red jersey, man, those are good-looking uniforms.
Well, I agree with you on all of that. I do think the Georgia fans are lucky to have a nice-looking uniform. I think pretty much anybody's going to look good. You put some Georgia gear on them. As you said, there are plenty of other schools where I'm not quite so sure that's the case. However, let me pitch you on a little bit different idea that I've been kind of sort of coming towards the last year or so, because fans do like them and because I do think there's a weird stigma about them for reasons we don't even have to get into right now. I think Kirby Smart's hesitant to wear them. So I almost wonder if for like 1 year, Georgia should just make that the home jersey, wear them 6-7 times, whatever number of home games you have. That destigmatizes them all the way around. And now you can simply just sort of choose to wear them as a fashion choice. And it's kind of taken me a while to get to that point because, as you said, as I've said before, I'm pretty traditionalist for the most part. And I do love the traditional red and silver. And I wouldn't even mind maybe seeing a throwback to the old red pants on the road at some point in time, like George used to wear back in the 80s. But as a way of destigmatizing this, I'm almost wondering if Georgia shouldn't wear them more, at least for a little while, just so, you know, fans get a chance to see a jersey they enjoy. It almost certainly helps apparel sales. You can probably sell a lot of those things. And then from that point on, it doesn't become this, like, huge potential distraction, which we know Smart hates distractions. It doesn't become a huge potential distraction every time you choose to wear them.
At BA, I love the fact that you can feel passionately and express a solid case for making that happen. I, on the other hand, I'm okay with it being unique and different. And, yes, it comes with a certain level of excitement and engagement. I think some fans see it as a stigma that, oh, no, it could be a distraction. I also think it could bring some much-needed energy at a specific time where you could use it as a tool to get the fan engagement and try to swing things in your favor. And I like the fact that it's unique and can play into those big games. Now, at the end of the day, your players still have to go out there and perform, and your coaches have to call plays that are winnable. And so it's fun. It's great for the fans. I like it. I still like it as a change-up and something that we can use as a spark that really shouldn't impact the game directly but can absolutely impact fan engagement for specific games.
On a more serious topic for a moment, let me deal with a couple of logistical things. There was a kind of a nice video that UGA put out directed not towards its fans but its actual student-athletes, encouraging them as they're getting back into the academic swing, having to be, you know, remote for this academic period here to make sure they stay buckled down and, you know, taking care of business in the classroom the way they're supposed to. Now, I've joked with our audience that when I was in college, there was very little technology to speak of whatsoever. So I have really very little idea of what college is like for these students these days, just given the fact that they're not in classrooms and having to do a lot of this from a technological standpoint. I guess, John, as a person who was a very good student, how easy or maybe not do you think it is for these student athletes, football players, obviously the ones that our audience is probably thinking the most about, how easy is it for them to keep up with their coursework right now, you think, given the fact they don't really quite have that same level of layers of accountability to what they're used to having if they're on campus in Athens?
Oh, I'm sure they're engaged with their screens more than they would have ever imagined, whether it's with the tutors and the academic support staff that exists in Athens. You know firsthand the digital learning experience for kids that aren't collegiate,
yeah,
and the demands that takes. It is very time-consuming, and there are adjustments that have to be made. I'm sure professors, you know, my wife's a teacher, and you're trying to pare down and become as specific as possible in what is important for your student base to glean from this semester. And some of these college courses, there's just so much information that they're trying to convey. It's going to be a challenge. I fully expect that across the board, there's probably a leniency that's extended, and you're not trying to lose this entire semester worth of knowledge and the fact that you're still trying to educate your entire student body in the fields that they are paying for these courses. But it's going to be tough, man. It's tough for all of us, and we're making the best of a less than ideal scenario. And it's you know, we spoke about this, I think it was last week, the challenge of being a student athlete in this environment is so unique. And I have no doubt that the cream will rise to the top of those that are able to self-motivate both in the classroom and with their workouts. I mean, it is, you don't have that same regimented routine that you've grown accustomed to, and it's going to be a real challenge. And you know, I'm hoping, I've seen it on Twitter, some guys that are trying to step out as leaders and just influence those that you can't have direct interaction with on a daily basis like you normally could.
Yeah, I think the practical reality here is that you're worried if you're a coach about someone falling through the cracks, right? Like, if you look out across your entire roster, you see 80 to 90% of the guys obviously doing what they're supposed to do. And I mean both in the weight room and the classroom here for a moment. But there's always that fear. And as a parent, I think you have the same kind of fear with your own children of, well, we're keeping up with our, you know, diet the best we can. We're keeping up with our academics the best we can. But, oh, lo and behold, this thing kind of fell through the cracks a little bit. I think if you're a coach, when it comes to this academic stuff, that's what you're worried about is somehow the – I guess the procedural accountability allows something to go unchecked for a couple of weeks. And over the course of a semester, that could turn into a little bit of a problem. I imagine there are a lot of coaches right now hoping that they have the kind of hierarchical, if that's the right word, checks and balances in place just to make sure that they are helping these guys and for other sports, the gals, kind of do what they need to do to make sure they're staying on top of this, because no one can really afford for this to be a loss in terms of everything they hope to be doing once life gets back to normal, hopefully in a couple of months.
Totally agree. You can't let this just be lost. And I tell you what, with the expansion of staffs and personnel, auxiliary personnel that across the board is available to these athletic departments, they are much better positioned than we would have been in the past, just on a personnel side of things. But University of Georgia, you know, I'm on the athletic board there, and I'm on a subcommittee for student wellness, and we often get presentations of all of the support staff, the ancillary and auxiliary staff members that are providing support for our student athletes off of their competitive fields, if you will. And Georgia does a tremendous job of making sure that every resource that is providable is available to our student athletes. And I am sure that they've scrambled the jets, so to speak, to be as prepared and service our student athletes as well as possible in these very unique situations that you know, each student's going to have a different demand on them just because of the course they're taking academically. And I'm very grateful that we have a tremendous staff over in Athens that I'm sure is trying to stay on it, because that extends far outside of that coaching staff. I mean, those coaches know X's and O's and where to line you up and how to get you better at playing, and they're completely reliant on the rest of the staff over there to make sure that all the off-the-field boxes are being checked for these guys.
So there was some news that came out towards the end of last week, or actually at the end of last week, late on Friday, that the SEC has now approved some video conference meetings. Coaches can now meet with players. And I don't know, John, this just did me a lot of good. And it's not just because, oh, good, now Tom Munkin and Jamie Newman can talk about the offense. I mean, that's obviously, you know, part of it. But something about the notion that coaches are talking to players again about football, even if it is through the magic of video, and even if they're still not allowed to have face-to-face contact and can't be anywhere near the Georgia campus right now, there's just something really comforting to know that at some point in time today, a position coach is going to get some guys together via a video conference and talk about football again. I take that to be really, really good news, and I was glad the SEC kind of took this step, because it seems like one of a few necessary steps we have to take towards eventually waving an all-clear flag at some point in time.
Yeah, and you're not going to be able to fully replace spring ball. And, you know, if you have a veteran group that's familiar with the coaching staff and you've been in place a while and you're only changing out a couple places, it's not that big of a deal. But for Georgia, I mean, we're in a little bit of a transition where you've lost some key players and some unique spots, and you have a new offensive coordinator. And I think that's really where the focus is for this team, is how quickly can you spin up all these new parts and get them all coordinated, much different than the defense where, you know, there are so many established pieces over there and developmental projects from last year that you feel encouraged about. But offense is a little bit of a different scenario. And so the fact that now they're availing these opportunities for these guys to engage with their coaches and develop, it's not going to be the same as spring ball. You're not going to get that on-the-field work that you normally would, but there's a lot to this game that that's in between the ears, and trying to keep guys on the same page or get them on this new page with the changes in the staff, I think is vital and a much needed step. And I'm sure they're all very grateful for it. I know every coach would love to spend all day, every day with the players. And it may not be the vice versa. I mean, the players probably don't love it, but I know the coaches probably do.
I don't know if you've ever been on a cruise before, John. I have. I can tell you that when a cruise ship is coming into port, when it has to make a sharp turn, it turns very slowly. Once it's out on the open sea and it's moving, the momentum's kind of hard to stop. But in close to port, it moves pretty slowly. I think college football can be kind of the same way. I thought it was really funny. I saw where Sports Business Journal had one of its writers saying, well, maybe they'll just, as a response to the coronavirus, move the season up into the summer. That way they can sort of play games and what might be a healthier environment, depending on how this virus grows and spreads over the course of the next couple of months. I always laugh when people who maybe don't have quite as, I guess, a granular an understanding of how football works suggest something as dramatic as that, because I'm pretty sure you'll join me in saying that this is not the kind of thing you just blink your eye and say, okay, let's just go play some games in the summer. Yeah, this isn't flag football on the beach. Yeah.
Let's look at the calendar and move some games around. I mean, perfect.
Can you imagine Kirby Smart if you told him, hey, Kirby, I know you're getting ready for season to start in September. We're actually going to start this thing in late June. Can you imagine the look on Kirby Smart's face the person who has to tell him that?
I can imagine the number of players that are going to pass out from heat exhaustion for this. All those pads on in the middle of June. Oh, man, it would be bad across the board. So,
on a serious note, though, to finish up here, what do you think of, I guess, some of the stuff that's out there, just given the fact that we don't know yet when other sports are going to begin? I think Wimbledon's on the verge of being canceled for June, and obviously the U.S. Open now is the next golf tournament that's looking at having to alter its date a bit, not to say nothing of the NHL and the NBA, Major League Baseball. And, you know, there's going to be this rush on some people within the media who want to say, what does this mean for football? What does this mean for football? Even though we're still months away from having that be a realistic, you know, decision that needs to be made. I mean, what do you make of the people who begin the question of what football is going to look in the fall? Is it too early to make any kind of projection on that, or is that something you've also thought about?
Well, I read your article about Kirk Herbstreit and the reactions of, well, could they possibly cancel the football season? And I understand that train of thought. I think there's so many questions left to be answered. We are in kind of the peak period of coronavirus affecting our entire country. And once we get more information, will the summer kill off the virus or the effects of it, much like we see with the flu? How will that affect it? How will it affect it once we get to fall? We don't know these things yet. So anything at this point is so speculative. I think we'll have a much better understanding of what our reaction needs to be and where we will be just in general in life and how we need to react and control our behavior and concerns with this coronavirus by June, even well in advance of starting a season and spinning that up. So at this point, I think anything is speculation as to what we should do in the fall. And we just need more time. We need more time to gather information and figure out the effects and how best to manage them and put people in positions where they're not risking their lives for entertainment.
So I stopped by the local Marlowe's Tavern in my neighborhood this past week, got some delicious to-go food, picked it up. I was very impressed with the way that Marlowe's, which has always kind of had a dedicated staff for to-go orders, was taking such great care to make sure that I was able to pick my order up without really much contact with any person at all. It was very well prepared. My family loved it. And by the way, also, this is a great time to enjoy a Marlowe's Tavern gift card. Between now and April the 15th, Marlowe's adding 20% to your gift card order. You can find out more information about this by simply sending an email to info@marlowestavern.com. That's info@marlowestavern.com. And you can find out more information about that. John, speaking of information, I'd love to get some UGA football info from you. Thank you for being here as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update here today. I hope you have a great week. And first of all, thanks for the plug on my article, and also look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Hey, it's always a blast, BA. And at the end of the day, sooner or later, we're going to be able to watch some Georgia football. And
boy, that's a nice
I look
thought.
Forward to that day. So
all right.
Y'all have a great one. Stay safe.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really good stuff from John Stinchcomb. It's great to be able to have him as part of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia here today. Let me also remind you about my friends at the AJC. Great time for you to stay up to date on everything happening in the world. And there's really, in my lifetime, maybe no more important time to stay up to date on the news of the day than we have going on right now. And the AJC provides you a great chance to do that. If you go to the website, dognation.com, a link at the top of the page, that'll get you to the daily AJC e-paper, which right now is made available to you for free of charge. An incredibly generous act on the part of the AJC right now, and something that you're going to want to pay close attention to as you follow the news in our world here right now. A huge thanks to the AJC for making that available. And as we transition to our SEC Through here for a moment, you know, I talked earlier about how Georgia is rated in the USA Today, way too early top 25 rankings, going from a number 11 in a previous edition of that all the way up to number 3 right now. But it was also kind of fair to point out a couple of the other SEC teams that kind of show up here on this. LSU really highly rated there in the top 10. Georgia rated ahead of Alabama in the way too early USA Today rankings. I may get into a little bit more of this later on this week, but watching these various preseason top 25s of who ranks Alabama ahead of Georgia, who ranks Georgia ahead of Alabama, that's kind of interesting to me right now. In this particular case, USA Today takes the Dogs ahead of Alabama, so pretty interesting, but both Alabama and LSU are rated highly in that top 10. When you get down a little lower, you know, past Florida, and you get to the number 12 mark, the number 13 mark, and it's interesting to see that in USA Today's way too early top 25, and this is just one opinion from one person, there's no shortage of these kinds of things out there on the internet, but in this particular case, USA Today rates Auburn ahead of Texas A&M. Auburn comes in at number 12, Texas A&M comes in at number 13. This is really, to me, a put-up-or-shut-up type year for Jimbo Fisher. Now, I've told y'all before, I think of Fisher as a pretty good coach, and big bucks that were spent to bring Fisher into College Station, I think of that as a coup. Now, the SEC West is a very difficult division to make a name for yourself in, and Fisher's finding at Texas A&M, that's pretty tough to do. He's also in the midst of making a pretty big transition there. This is a program that had been kind of dominated by finesse for a long time, and you know, they're trying to be a little bit more physical under Fisher. That's a difficult changeover to make. But this is one of those years in which if A&M were to finish 13th, if we just for the sake of conversation say that the USA Today way too early top 25, or as they're now calling it, a preseason top 25, if that's really the way the season's going to play out, and A&M finishes 13th in the country, that'll put them like 4th in the SEC West, behind Auburn a step ahead of them at 12, LSU and Alabama as well. Jimbo Fisher cannot afford to finish 4th in the SEC West this year. Not when he's the one guy that has the more experienced quarterback, Kellen Mond more experienced than any other quarterback in that division right now. Not after the way that he's recruited. Not after the fact that the schedule now for A&M is a lot easier on paper than it was the last couple of years. There's no Clemson on that schedule, for instance. This is one of those years where if you're Jimbo Fisher, you can't afford to be 4th in the SEC West. So if you're looking for pressure, not hot seat kind of stuff, hot seat is somebody else. You know, you don't say Jimbo Fisher's in the hot seat, but in terms of really having to do something to keep fans there in College Station from getting really restless, Fisher in a tough division's got to find a way to be near the top of it. I don't think you have to win it, but I think you do have to finish in the top 10, and I think you got to go and put a big record together. So I think it's interesting to see right now USA Today, one of the outlets not quite buying into the notion of Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M as being one of the nation's elite teams. If that's not the case, if they can't make a case for being 11-1 and second in the West and, you know, near the top of the SEC, that's not a great scenario for Jimbo in terms of a very happy offseason a year from now. A couple other things to get to. You may have seen this at the end of the day on Friday. The SEC has kind of approved some video teleconference meetings, coaches with players. I take great comfort in this. I know I talked to John Stinchcomb about this a moment ago. It's nice to see this going on again. It's also fair to point out that at least as the time I'm recording this podcast. At least at the time I'm recording this podcast, not every conference had followed suit with the SEC on this. For instance, I know Oklahoma coach Lincoln Riley was expressing some frustration with the fact that the Big 12 is not yet allowing their coaches to kind of go through this process yet of being able to have those video conference meetings. He was feeling like that was a little bit of a competitive disadvantage for the Big 12 right now. The reason why I say as of the time of this recording that hadn't changed, there's a sense that's probably about to change for the Big 12 also. It seems like a weird, I guess, bureaucratic process to the fact that these coaches wouldn't have already been allowed to do this anyway. But it looks like some video conference meetings with coaches and players at the SEC level is on its way, starting today, and then other conferences following suit. So we're not you know, too far away from hearing some more good news, it would seem. And that's a nice thing to be able to say, is coaches, players meeting together, especially in the case of Todd Monken working with Jamie Newman and everything else. So nice the SEC acted quickly to get their coaches this kind of freedom and luxury to be able to talk to their players once again. You may have seen the Sports Business Journal story over the course of the last few days of possibly because of the coronavirus, instead of moving the season back, moving the season forward, starting the games in the summer. I think it's just a ridiculous notion all the way around. It seems like this has sort of been resoundingly rejected by other reporters based on their sources. It just seems like a silly topic, right? I mean, it just seems impossible to imagine that's something that you'd be able to do. But nonetheless, that's what Sports Business Journal is out there talking about. Of course, many of you probably read the column that I wrote on Friday for DogNation.com, pushing back against what Kirk Herbstreit said about there being no season at all. I mean, my take on this is, I'm going to continue to enjoy what we're hearing from guys like SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey and NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, who are for the most part operating as if it's going to be business as usual. And if there's some sort of bad decision that has to be made months from now, let it be made months from now. There's really no reason whatsoever we should be talking about any of this here at the moment. It's just still way too early. I mean, we're still 5 months away from the start of the season. So anybody who's kind of pushing this as a necessary talking point right now would seem to be doing so on the basis of they have nothing else to talk about and they have to be, you know, out in the public doing something. So from that standpoint, I'm not too worried about that. I think the Sports Business Journal report about playing the season in the summer is just patently ridiculous. One more thing I'll mention here as part of our SEC through, vaguely Georgia-related, Travion Henderson, running back, probably to no surprise, did make his announcement of Ohio State. This was a guy that may have waited longer but decided to kind of go ahead and make a jump towards the Buckeyes there. We'd kind of predicted that Ohio State was going to be very active in the running back recruiting market in the 2021 class, and they have done so in a big way, getting Evan Pryor, responding to that with Travion Henderson. So after the Buckeyes had missed out on a couple running backs there for a while, they have jumped in here pretty big and pretty quick to get Henderson. So good job for them, and that means that Georgia will not be turning its attention to guys like Dominic Edwards and others, as it also has a need for running backs in the class of 2021. Let me take a moment here to remind you about my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. You know, if you're dealing with a cracked foundation or a wet spot in your basement, you know, a lot of rain for a while there, which maybe made you notice some moisture creeping into your house in a way you'd never seen that before. Well, if you're dealing with that, or if you're dealing, as I said before, with one of those foundation issues, one of those little things that can be easy to ignore when you're really, really busy, but if you're forced to be home a little bit more, all of a sudden you're kind of forced to pay a little bit more attention to that. Well, the good news is there is a solution to your problem. It's Engineered Solutions of Georgia, a solutions-based company. That means if it's a simple fix, and many times these kinds of things are, they'll just tell you to go to the hardware store and buy something to fix the problem that you have. However, sometimes when it comes to a foundation issue, especially it's something that involves the structural integrity of your home, that fix can be a little bit more substantial, a little bit more difficult to deal with. And if that be the case, then Engineered Solutions of Georgia is also a company you want to trust, because they have two full-time engineers on staff. They also offer a fully transferable triple protection warranty on materials, installation, and design. And as I said before, two full-time engineers on staff to help you get the work done. That's why I trust Engineered Solutions of Georgia. ESOG is also a proud partner of the University of Georgia, which is a really, really good thing to keep in mind there as well. Easy to get in touch with, too. Simply give them a call at 678-ESOG-NOW. That's 678-ESOG-NOW. That'll get you in touch with my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And as we get ready to wrap up here today, I will remind you that the Gatorator Updater, it's now been 1,248 days since those lousy, stinking Gators beating the Georgia Bulldogs. Boy, that's good news. And it's so much fun to think about being back in Jacksonville again, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, able to get within 6 feet of each other again and enjoy what is usually very nice late fall weather, golf courses, bars, restaurants, all the things we've taken for granted in the past. Fun to think about being back on that Florida First Coast again and enjoying that soon. And fun to know that Georgia will be having a long winning streak it'll be defending against those lousy, stinking Gators when we get there. So really good stuff all the way around on that front. 1,248 days. That's how long it's been since the lousy, stinking Gators beat the Georgia Bulldogs. Their Gatorator Updater. Thanks so much for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia here today. Don't forget, full week of podcasts for us. That means talking about all the things going on with the UGA, looking ahead to the upcoming season, dealing with the news of the day as it occurs, recruiting stuff, everything else. We're live on video at 10 a.m. That means you get a chance to interact with me as per usual. The podcast, very much the way we've come to expect it to be, whether it be radio, podcast, video, whatever else. We're here for you on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being here for us. So hope your week gets off to a great start here on this Monday. We'll look forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow for Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door. We'll look forward to talking to you then.